Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Boy, I'm ready for this. I'm ready for this because it's a great day. Oh, the mist of Mardi Gras are out in the streets. Look at that. You see it? It's everywhere. It's the signal. John Nodar and I were talking about this last night. It's the signal that spring is here, that Mardi Gras is here. Mardi Gras is our spring festival. And listen, here's the other thing. Boy, it's coming early. That worries me a little bit. We're going to talk about that. It's coming early. The azaleas, Southern Indians are showing color. It may be one of the earliest years for Southern Indians we've ever seen. I think it could be a good year. We're going to see. Could be a good year. But it's boy, it's happening out there, folks. It's getting ready to happen. Listen, there's so many things we've got to talk about. And here it is. There's so many different things that you need to know right now because it is spring. It's just spring. I mean, it's not fake spring. It's just spring. And you got to be ready for it. There's so many things you got to be ready for. There's too much to talk about in one day. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to tell you, you better start thinking about what you need to know so you can call me and ask me. Because I might not get to it if you don't call and ask me. So I know that I got to talk about bananas today. Ooh, it's time. It's time to talk about bananas. I know you're going to talk about the spring weeds. We're going to talk about that as little as we can. But we'll talk about it. We got to talk about planting tomatoes. We got to talk about when the azaleas bloom. But listen, here's this thing I'm determined to talk about. Because I've been thinking about it so hard, and it's so much fun. Let me start out with this way. Real men eat collard flowers. That's what I'm telling you, folks. This is the season of eating flowers out of the garden.
Now, that wasn't cauliflowers. It was
collard flowers.
Okay.
Let's make sure we got all our consonants in there.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, here's the thing. This is the season of eating flowers. Now, you think that's I don't know what you think that is, but you've missed it. You just flat missed it if you think that's strange because everything's going to start going to flower in your garden. So many things are going to start going to flower. You don't think it's strange at all. You might not like it, but you don't think it's strange that people eat broccoli. I know there are a lot of you out there who are proud of your cauliflower. Well, what do you think you're eating? Broccoli and cauliflower, you're eating flower heads. You're eating the flower buds. That's what that's all about. That's what that's all about. Now, here's the interesting part. Here's the really interesting part. It ain't just broccoli and cauliflower that produce lots and lots of flower buds and flowers this time of year. And in fact, there's a whole bunch of stuff in your garden that's going, you call it, the old name for it, was going to seed. Oh, it's going to seed, man. It's all over. We can't eat that cauliflower. We can't eat them collards no more because they're going to seed. We can't eat the cabbage because it's going to seed. The mustard, man, it's gone. It's just gone. Forget that stuff. There's nothing wrong with a plant going into flower, and that's what they're going to do this time of year. Virtually all of the annual plants that you've been growing in your garden over the winter are going to go into flower right now. And every one of them is going to produce, I can just about guarantee you, every one of them is going to produce a delicious flower. And here's the good part. Here's the neat part. The flowers have some of the character of the plant that produces them. The collard flower, you can say, I bet you could close your eyes and you could say, that almost tastes like a collard. But the flower gives it a different dimension, a sweetness, a depth, a kind of a nectar-like quality. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing to do. Can you eat any flower that's blooming this time of year? Let me be clear. No. Don't go out and eat your azalea flowers. I don't know. We got, you know, David's working on the camellias. Maybe you can eat the camellia flowers. I wouldn't eat the magnolia flowers because I can tell you they're probably going to be pretty astringent. And I wouldn't eat the cherry flowers. I just wouldn't do that. But let me tell you, anything that's in your vegetable garden that's flowering right now is going to produce beautiful, delicious flowers. And there are lots of things that do it. They do it because it's natural. Look, these are annual plants. Your cabbage, your collards, your mustards, your kohlrabi. You don't know what kohlrabi is. Your komatsuna. You don't know what that is either, do you? Your kale. All of these things. Your arugula. All of these things are going to go to seed because they're all annuals. That means they try to live and die and reproduce in 1 year. They're true annuals, and so when they get that signal, when it goes from hot to cold to hot again, they sense, oh, man, it's time. they're going to send up flowers. And so they're all doing it this time of year. They're producing them in great numbers, and they're all absolutely delicious. There's actually, you know, I've been eating them for a long time. And didn't know what to call them. There is a name I'm discovering that people are beginning to use for these flowers. It's a name you may have seen in the fancy grocery store. It's called Raab, R-A-A-B. If you go to the fancy grocery stores, you can buy something called Broccoli Raab. Now, Broccoli Raab, you may know, is not a true broccoli. It's actually a relative of turnips. It's probably pretty close to a regular turnip. But it's a turnip that has been bred to produce flower heads. And so it produces lots of flower heads. That's what Broccoli Raab is. So now what we're doing is, and I'm liking it, it's fine. It's fine. I think it'll work. Everybody, people who are beginning to appreciate this that we're going to flower, not to seed, they're calling all these things. So we can call it collard Raab. We can call it mustard Raab. We can call it arugula Raab. We could call it cabbage Raab. It's delicious. And you don't have to feel bad about eating it. You don't think you're doing something strange because it's got one of those official names on it that sounds like it's from a foreign country. So you know it's got to be good. Huh? It's a great season of flowering. It's a great season of flowering. My nasturtiums are blooming. So listen, everything that's a member of the cabbage family, the collard family, all those things, cabbages, collards, broccolis, cauliflowers, arugulas, they're all related. They're all related. Anything in that family that's producing a flower right now, I can just about guarantee you it's going to be incredibly delicious. Incredibly delicious. Some of those flowers are just, I mean, I would grow the plants just to have them go to seed, as you say, and produce those flowers. Can you eat, you know, now when we eat broccoli, because I know I got to get you over this hump. When you eat broccoli, you're eating the buds, the flowers that haven't quite opened yet. That's traditionally. And so when your broccoli begins to flower, when those buds open, you think, oh man, something's wrong. Well, ain't nothing wrong. They're just as good with the flowers as they were with the buds. As long as the stems don't get too wiry or too tough, which they won't do, eat them. They're delicious. Eat the flowers. Eat the buds. And you can do the same thing with all of the collards. Don't worry if they're already producing, if those buds have already opened quickly into flowers. A lot of plants will do that. But the flowers themselves on broccoli, I prefer broccoli that has actually begun to open up and showing some flowers because it has a sweetness. It has a sweetness, particularly if you eat them fresh, that you just wouldn't get otherwise. It's a great thing. Are there other things? Yes, we're going to talk about the other nasturtiums. Man, the nasturtiums are blooming like crazy right now, and they are unbelievably delicious. One of the great things, it's been a great year for nasturtiums. My nasturtiums survived all winter long, of course. They're even growing in the garden. They're beginning to spread out from the ground. They're everywhere. The nasturtiums are going to produce beautiful flowers this year. They're going to have lots of nasturtiums. They're going to be great tasting. Pot marigolds. There are a lot of other things that are producing them. You know, this year the rosemary is producing a lot. I'm going to try the rosemary flowers. Hey, did I mention this? Real men eat collard flowers. Give us a call this morning. Tell us what you want to talk about.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's the Gulf Coast, Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. We're going to talk about lots of things this morning. I got some great questions already. Rusty, over in Moss Point, you can always make me happy by asking me a good question about native plants and native trees. And Rusty made me very happy this morning. Can we just talk? Can I just mention Tupelo? Tupelo is one of these words. It's not just a city. It's not just a song by an Irishman. It is a tree. Tupelo. We forget what a tupelo is. Tupelo was a name we gave in the South to several types of trees in the Nyssa family. Gums. Some people call them gums. Black gum. Swamp gum. Water gum. Ogeechee gum. There are several different species of Nyssa that grow in the South. They're all tupelo. They all produce these really neat flowers that bees really love. So we had this discussion about it. Nyssa flowers, Nyssa biflora, can produce really good honey. There's no question. When these trees flower, a lot of people in certain parts of the area, they prepare their hives for the tupelo honey. For the Nyssa honey by cleaning out the old honey. When they see those things come into flower, then they've got pure Nyssa honey. So Rusty asked me, which is the best? Oh, Rusty. Now it's a great question. I'm happy with it. Which is the best? Because we got four or five species we got to deal with. You know, Rusty, one of the things that's really common in the bayous and in the Pascagoula bottoms is the tupelo that grows in the swamps and in the bottoms and in the water sometimes. It's got that flared trunk. You know how the trunk flares out sort of like a cypress trunk, but really distinctly pumpkin-shaped butt. That's what they call it. A pumpkin-shaped butt is what the foresters call it. It's right there at the base. It's a flared, very flared bottom. And they have really large leaves. I love them. That's the water tupelo. And you know, one of the interesting things about that tree is I actually think we ought to be using that in our cities more. It's a great, beautiful tree. It deals with compacted soils, and it deals with heavy soils and wet soils, which we have a big problem with in all of our cities here right along the Gulf Coast. Deals with those soils really well. And it's a great tree. It's grapefruit. It's eaten by a lot of creatures. The same is true for black gum, which is kind of the upland, the gum that doesn't grow in the swamp. Black gum, traditional black gum, tupelo gum. It grows on the uplands. It has really beautiful leaf color. It's great. The leaves are smaller than the one that grows in the swamp. They're in summer, I don't think they're quite as pretty. And I don't think the trunk is quite as pretty in summer, but it has beautiful fall color. It, too, has lots of really nice fruit that are beloved by creatures. It doesn't do as well in wet situations. And you can't plant a big one because it has a deep, deep root that it doesn't like to be moved. It doesn't like to be moved except in very small sizes. So black gum is another great one. Ogeechee gum is one that's not native here. It's actually native a little farther east of here. But it produces Ogeechee limes. So the fruit you can actually eat. It has a tart quality to it that a lot of people really like. So it's a Nyssa. It's a tupelo that humans like to consume as well as wildlife. And Ogeechee's fun. It's a small tree. It's kind of a squat tree. It should be pretty adaptable. It certainly will take very wet soils. You don't have to plant it in very wet soils. It's a neat tree if you want to experiment with it in your yard. I don't think I would plant it in the middle of the swamp, but if you wanted to plant one in your yard, I think it'd be a good thing to do. And then there's yet another one that I wouldn't recommend on the bayou called Biflora. It tends to be a black water stream kind of tree, and it's really neat. There's some great horticultural varieties of it. But, you know, so there you go. So, Rusty, you got to think about what you're doing with it. I love Aquatica. If I were, you know, I think we ought to be doing more with it. That's water tupelo, the one that grows in the middle of the swamps with the big leaves. A lot of fun. Ooh, boy, I'm glad I got to talk about that. Tara, you want to talk about these flower things?
Well, yes, sir. You kind of surprised me there.
Yeah.
My basic questions are, well, and I also have some reporting to do. I did grow, in fact, I grew it as a mustard. It was a mustard that was some kind of a wild mustard. And I grew it for years and let it flower, and it made an absolutely gorgeous background for other plants that were taller. The little yellow flowers with all the stuff, and then whatever else I had, you know, peeking up out of it. I made the mistake of turning the soil one year, and they never came back. So that's one thing. Basically, my questions are nightshade, the nightshade members of a family, like peppers. And even tomatoes, if things work out, some of you have some tomato flowers that you would want to use. I mean, you wouldn't want to, like, sit down and make a whole dish of anything like that.
Well, so that's an interesting one. So I'm going to say no, don't eat the Solanaceae flowers. So anything from that tomato family, and there's some very beautiful flowers in that family. There's no question. They're absolutely stunning. I would be a little concerned. I don't think you'd hurt yourself bad. You could get a tummy ache. They do tend to have a little more chemical concentration. They don't have it in the fruit because the fruit of tomatoes is designed to be eaten by other creatures, if you think about it. I mean, the plant did that on purpose. They made tomatoes edible.
Other creatures ate mine.
Yeah, they made tomatoes edible on purpose. The flowers and sometimes the leaves of some types of nightshade can be a little toxic. It would probably be hard to kill you with any of them because you probably wouldn't be able to stand to eat enough of them to actually do any damage because they don't taste very good.
So use them on the edge of a plate for garnish. Explain to a guest that it's not like parsley. You can eat the parsley, but don't eat the flowers.
Yeah, I guess you could do that. But then, you know, I think our problem with flowers is we think they're always decoration, and so we never eat them. And so my goal would be to convince people, oh, man, flowers are edible. So I wouldn't put an unedible flower on my plate because there's so many good edible flowers.
Okay, and I'd like to mention another one. The one thing that people, a lot of people at this time of year are cursing as a winter weed, the famous old rattlesnake.
Hmm. Well, and I have not eaten rattlesnake weed flowers. But I love the roots, of course. The roots are delicious. But I'll have to try the flowers. Mint flowers
are the leaves, right?
Huh? And the leaves are probably okay. They're mint, and I don't like the leaves as much. I've actually had the leaves. I've actually chewed on the leaves a little bit, but they would probably be okay in a green in greens if you mixed them in with something else. It's a member of the mint family, and sometimes the mint flowers can be a bit strong, and so can the. But I love mints. As do we all.
Well, and I'm thinking again, you know, it's like now, of course, you want to use any on a dish. You would want to use it on something that's cold.
That's
right. You're not going to put it on something that's hot because it's going to immediately melt into whatever anyway.
That's
right.
And so as a garnish, it would be.
Just as, you know, a little gild on the lily, shall we say, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
The little bit of fat, you know?
That's right. So that would be just.
I just wanted to know if I was on track.
All right, Tara. It's always good to hear from you. Thank you,
man. Thank you, man. Too.
Hey, so we're Glenn. You're gonna have to hold on because we talked our way through this 15-minute segment pretty well, and we're fixing to have to take a break. But we're gonna be back here in just a minute. So hold on. Hey, and folks, feel free to give us a call. Dan, I'm gonna talk to you about them tomatoes and other things just as soon as we get back.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Yes, 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 yes. It's going to be an interesting year. I mean, things are starting out so early. We're not going to be in as bad a shape as I think North Alabama is going to be. I think those folks are going to be in for a shock. I will say that Birmingham is ahead right now of it's almost ahead of Mobile. Montgomery and Birmingham are almost ahead of Mobile in terms of things blooming. It's incredible. Not quite, but they are way ahead of where they usually are. Huntsville's way ahead. And it's only going to be warm. It's going to be warm. We thought maybe there'd be another cold spell, which would be good. Actually, would be good if it was just a little cold spell, kind of hold things in there. But it's going to be warm. It looks like maybe warmer than normal over the next 3 weeks. And then we got El Nino. So El Nino's coming in. We've had an official El Nino declaration. You know, it's a weak El Nino, so we don't know what it means. Generally, El Nino means that there are fewer hurricanes, but some of our worst hurricanes have occurred during El Nino years. So, you know, don't jump up and down about that. Usually El Nino means a cooler spring, but this is a weak one. This is a weak one, so we don't know. Cooler and wetter. I do think the wet part is going to be part of our spring. And that's something we're going to have to deal with. I think the fog has actually kept us from advancing into spring as fast as some other places. So this mistiness may have actually helped us a little bit. Hey, Glenn, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, Bill, I got two questions for you.
Yes, sir.
So I was listening to Dr. Bill Williams on your station the other day, and he said he doesn't expect another freeze. He doesn't see any more cold weather coming down this year or this winter. So can I go ahead and fertilize my grass?
Yeah.
Too early for that?
Well, I would say a little bit. So let's talk about it. If you use a chemical fertilizer, if you use an artificially created fertilizer that just the fact of the matter is it's going to be released fairly quickly. If your grass isn't green yet, you know what that you know where that nitrogen is going to go? It's going to go to the weeds.
Okay.
So it's a good idea to wait until you see your grass green up if you're going to use a chemical fertilizer. Now, if you were to use a natural fertilizer, a fertilizer that breaks down naturally, that's not produced in a factory by separating ammonia from the air, et cetera. If you were to use cottonseed meal, and I'm not saying that's the only one, but if you were to use that, which I recommend for lawns, it works pretty well, you could put it on right now. It'd be fine. In fact, this is a great time to put it on because it's released slowly. And it won't be released until the ground warms up, which is going to be about the time that the grass starts turning green. So it depends on which one you use. But, yes, I would say it's too early. It's too early till you see that grass green up. So even – you know, in a normal year, we don't put lawn fertilizer on until we really see the St. Augustine green up, which is usually April. April's a great time to put it on. This year, I could say, yeah, it's probably going to be March. We're going to see it green up in March unless something crazy happens. And I think Dr. Bill may be mostly right, but February is a little early.
Let me ask you another question.
Yes, sir.
So being that we're not really going to see much cold weather, why in the world does the Botanical Gardens have their tomato sales so late into March? Why can't we get our tomatoes into February? I mean, I want to put my tomatoes in the ground like next week.
So here's the trick. Well, first off, you could grow your own.
Yeah, but
which
I mean,
a lot of
us
do.
Them from the Botanical Gardens for the last 3 years, and I just, yeah. You know, I mean, it's like March 15th or something. That's just too late.
It is late. So you know, I appreciate where they're coming from. The Botanical Gardens is made up of volunteers. They are not a business. So they struggle. And I, back in the day when I was heavily involved with the Botanical Gardens and had control, I made them. It's my fault that we started a tomato sale. And we pushed and we did it and we got it early and we got it in February. But it's hard to do. And it's hard to do for several reasons. One, you got to grow them. And we're not on the same cycle as other people. Now, they had somebody who was running the greenhouse and who was really proficient at it last year and the year before, and that all worked out really well. But it takes a big commitment from those volunteers, so I wouldn't get too mad at them.
I'm not mad. I just got to get some tomatoes in the ground. Bill, I hate to say it, I'm going to have to go to a big box store.
Yeah, well, if they have them ready, then you're okay, right? But even they may be behind, so... nobody's going to be prepared for this early spring. I'm not prepared with my tomatoes for this early spring. If I had known we were going to have such an early spring, then I would have planted my tomatoes in December. But I didn't do that. So.
All right, Bill. Hey, I appreciate your time this morning.
All right, Glenn. Good to hear from you. Hey, yeah. So here it is. You know, we could be planting tomatoes out. So the question is. This is to Dan's point. This is to a lot of people's point. What should we be doing with our tomatoes? The ground is probably warm enough now that we could put tomatoes out and they would do okay. The air temperature looks like it's going to be warm enough. Both of those things are pretty important. We don't see any big cold spells coming in. So you could argue that it's a great time to put your tomatoes out. But here's the thing. Nobody's got the tomatoes ready early enough. I haven't seen anybody whose tomatoes are big enough to put out right now. So Dan's got a bunch of tomatoes. They're in a pack, and they're looking really good. I know David's got his up. I know a lot of people have got them up. But I don't think anybody's got tomatoes that are quite large enough to go in the ground. You don't want to put them in when they're too small. You want to give them a little size on them for a lot of reasons. So, Dan, what I'm going to tell you, here's what you should do with your tomatoes right now. The days are incredibly warm. Put them out. Dan, don't worry about – I can tell because you got that funky color there, Dan, that looks like, you know, that looks like you're playing Jimi Hendrix in the background. So I know that you've got some kind of infrared light, and that's okay because Jimi Hendrix is good, and I think tomatoes grow really well to Jimi Hendrix. But here's my suggestion. Get them out from under that light. Take your speakers outside with the Jimi Hendrix playing and play it for the tomatoes while they're outside on the porch. You'll both be better for it. Give them some sunlight. They need the real sunlight at this point. It's plenty warm outside. If the night temperatures get down, if they get down below 50, you could bring them inside. In fact, if they get down below 60, bring them inside at night if you want to. But they'll do really well. I have my tomatoes out on the porch right now. I do have a heating mat underneath them to keep the soil warm at night to give them that extra little boost because I'm still trying to get my peppers to germinate. You know, peppers are that way sometimes. So there you go. Does that make sense, folks? If you've got questions about your tomatoes and what you should do about them, you give me a call. Can we cut our St. Augustine grass yet? This is Tony down on Fowl River. So, Tony, yeah, this is the – and here's the trick, isn't it, Tony? I mean, the fact of the matter is we're not really cutting St. Augustine. We're cutting the weeds, but that's the thing. That is it exactly. That's the perfect thing. If you want to control spring weeds, this is all I got to say. The spring weeds actually don't harm your grasses. I know you fret about them because you don't like to see anything but grass in your yard because we're monomaniacal that way. But the spring weeds are actually really cool, and actually a lot of them are good to eat, and we'll talk about that next week. But listen, here's the thing. You don't want those spring weeds. All you do is go out and mow. They're gone. You don't need to do anything fancy. You don't need – and the reason the spring weeds are growing is because you're not mowing. And the reason you're not mowing is because your St. Augustine grass ain't growing. And I'm going to make a poem out of this pretty soon. So, listen, here's the thing. Go ahead and mow the weeds right now. That's the smart thing to do. And don't – it's fine. It is absolutely fine. It's a good time to mow your St. Augustine because you're mowing your weeds. You're mowing them. And that's the way it works. Polecat's going to come up being snide this morning. That's okay. You know, he wakes up that way some mornings. Billy Bob. Oh, come on, Billy Bob. You're just trying to make everybody jealous. So Billy Bob's got me some tomato pictures of tomatoes, and they look really good. They're just beautiful looking tomatoes. I think, you know, you could give those. I'm kind of six of one, half a dozen of another. If you just transplanted them, Billy Bob, I would let them grow out in the pot just a little more, and get them just a touch bigger, just in case. But make sure, the big thing right now is make sure those plants get plenty of sun. And look at David. I mean, you guys are making me ashamed. I mean, I'm ashamed of myself that your tomatoes are bigger than my tomatoes. They're looking beautiful. So, I still give them a week or two. I don't think you're going to get a lot out of planting them out right now, even at that size. Billy Bobs are pretty good. They could go out, but I would hold on to them for just a little while longer. Let them get a little more thickness to the stem. But make sure you're giving them plenty of sunlight and Pink Floyd. That's what tomatoes need this time of year. Right, Dan? Okay. I could think of some other things. So that's Pink Floyd. But Pink Floyd's good. There's no problem with Pink Floyd. They respond to Pink Floyd just about as well as they respond to some other things. Mahler? Yeah, man, they really take off with Mahler. Hey, guys, we're going to be back here in just a minute. Oh, and we get to hear some good music.
I ain't gonna pick no peas, because everything on the front, you gotta get down on your bending knees. I dig no more taters. I decline, I ain't gonna pick no peas, because everything is on the phone, you know you got to go. I'll get down on your bended knee.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
And David wants to talk about seeds. And David, we're going to talk about – David's got a whole list of seeds I got to go through. But I'm ready for him. I'm ready for it, David. But hold on. I want to pick on some of these guys. There's a great question about what should you do about peppers that are overwintering. And I'm that's a great question. I think I'm going to wait another week or two, and then I'm going to prune them back. Okay. Just in case, because when you prune those peppers back, and I've got a bunch of peppers that survived the winter, man. All, in fact, every pepper I've got survived the winter. Now, they're not jalapeno kind of peppers. They don't do that well. But they're chinenses and they're bacotums. They're South American and Caribbean peppers, and they survived the winter very well. So, what am I going to do? Because they look a little ragged coming into spring sometimes. And they'll be big. They're going to be trees if this keeps on. Last year, when those peppers were through, they were taller than I am. Wow. And a bush. I mean, it looked like an azalea bush full of peppers. They're amazing things, them peppers. So what? I don't think I want them that big. I don't think I want a tree. And they're looking ragged around the edges, so I'm going to cut them back. I think we got the right thing. If you cut them back too soon, I find that it causes problems. So I would just, you know, if you ask me, what am I going to do? I'm going to wait 2 weeks. That's what I'm going to do. It may be you could prune them now and it wouldn't make any difference, but my thing is wait just a little while. There's, if you open wounds on plants and they can't close them up quickly enough because they're not growing fast enough, then those wounds become entry points to rot and other issues. If you prune them while they're actively growing and they're really growing fast, then they heal up those cuts very quickly. Does that make sense? Make sense? So just wait. Just hold off on it just a little longer. A little longer. Okay, David, I'm ready to talk seeds.
So, you're probably going to be a killjoy this morning and tell me everything I want to grow is not going to be grow well down here, but I'm going to ask anyway.
No, no, you're fine. You're fine. They're all a lot of these things I've never grown from seed. So, I mean, well, sort of. But let's go through the list. Let's go through the list.
Okay. First of all, on the top of the list is the sunflower seeds. Basically, I need to know, can I grow them in the pots that I need to grow them in before I put them in the ground, or do they need to start out in small pots and then get bigger as they grow, especially the trees that I have listed, or can I grow them in one big, one pot and then plant them in the ground?
I love sunflowers. I think my bet is that you'll do a little better putting them in pots. Don't let them get too big. As soon as they put those first new leaves on, put them out. So when they get a good solid set of, you'll actually have two tiers of leaves. You'll have the first leaves, the baby leaves, the cotyledons, and then they'll have the real leaves that look more like real sunflower leaves. When they get some size on them and you begin to see that third tier, plant them out, okay?
Okay.
And so, yeah, I would put those in pots. I think there will be some advantages to doing that in terms of not losing seeds to birds and other things. And just making sure, and you could sow them in the ground, and they'd probably do just okay as well. And David, you're doing it at just the right time. I think this is a great time to go ahead and plant those sunflower seeds out.
Okay, then next on the list is my Taiwanese cherry tree seeds, my Tupelo tree seeds, and the most important to me is the Honeycrisp apple tree seeds.
Okay, the Honeycrisp apple tree seeds, I don't see a lot of hope for. I don't recommend it. For a lot of reasons. But one, it's unlikely that you're going to get a Honeycrisp that's true to being a Honeycrisp from a seed.
Okay.
Secondly, even if you did, it is unlikely that it would produce well here because I think it needs more winter chilling, and it is certainly not very disease resistant here. So those two things are really going to be big problems for Honeycrisp. And the third,
I was afraid you were going to say that.
And the third factor is, even if it did come true from seed, and even if Honeycrisp were ideally suited for Mobile, it's going to be 15 years, 20 years before you see any significant fruit from a seed. Did I talk you out of it?
Well, probably, but I love the taste of the Honeycrisp apple. They're better than red apples, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. We don't do apples well down here. I mean, we just don't. And one, that's if you want a Honeycrisp apple tree, buy the tree. You'll still be disappointed. So, but the seed method ain't going to work. So let's go back to the other ones.
Okay.
So the Taiwan cherry is great. Most people get their Taiwan cherries from seeds. Here's the funny part. I've never actually gathered the seeds and planted them. There's usually lots of little seedlings coming up around the Taiwan cherry, which I sneak around in people's yards and dig up that. And I sneak around. I know where to get them. And I get the little seedlings coming up, and you can just yank a bunch of them up, and then replant them. So I've never actually planted them from seeds. So I don't know whether they need to sit on top of the ground. I don't know what. So you'll have to experiment. I don't know whether they need to be sown fresh. I don't know anything about it. I just kind of let them produce seeds and let those seeds fall, and then I pick up the little seedlings underneath the trees. I think it means, and we had a discussion with a lady who was having a problem, I think, getting her Taiwan seeds germinating. I think it means you probably need to sow them on the surface of the ground as fresh as possible when they fall off the tree. What do we do? You're going to sow them right away. Don't sow them too deep. I don't think they need to go that deep. You just press them in and see if they don't germinate.
So does that mean I need to start them in smaller pots and then graduate them to a bigger pot before I put them in the ground, or do I just need to put them in a big plant them in a big pot and then when they get big enough, put them in the ground?
You know, Taiwan cherries grow so dadgum fast. I would say once you got two or three sets of true leaves, just put them in the ground. Just put them in a regular old – put them in a – you know, you could even put them in a 2.5-inch pot. And once they got several sets of leaves, just put them in the ground. Man, those things – you can get – I've seen – I kid you not. I mean, I have seen 4, 5, and 6 feet of growth out of those trees in a year. And they'll grow really fast for 2 or 3 years, and then they just stop growing, and there it is. But it's but they're going to grow really fast. So start them in a smallish – you don't have to have a really big pot. And then just plant them out before the plant gets too big.
And then what about the black tupelo tree?
They're tough. And I'm wondering if the seeds are viable. Where'd you get the seeds for that?
I got them off the internet.
Okay, yeah. So you don't know whether they're going to be viable or not. But if they are, and I don't know, they probably need winter vernalization. They need a winter chilling period. So you might need to freeze those, or you might have to leave them outside for a year in the cold before they actually germinate. But go ahead and put them in pots. And here's the big thing. They need large pots because they have a deep taproot. They produce, well, at least when they're young. So they will produce this deep root, a youngster root, that's very deep, and it will be that root will be much deeper than the top is tall. And if you don't have them in a big pot, it will twist around and get all funky, and then it causes problems. So put it in as tall a pot as you can find. It doesn't need to be that big around, but it needs to be kind of tall. And once it gets any true leaves on it, you need to plant it outside.
Okay, so what you're saying is go with the water tupelos and the peach trees instead of the apple trees and the black tupelo trees.
Well, if you can – no, I would do the black tupelo. It's great. You're on an upland situation. You over there and on a hill somewhere in West Mobile, and I think you'd do just fine with the black tupelo. I think you should try it. I just say get it started. Once it germinates, you got to put it in the ground fast. Once it has the true leaves on there, that second or third set of leaves, you got to put it in the ground.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. David, it's good to hear from you. As usual, you got a lot of projects going on. Glad you do. Hey, folks, we got to take a break. But we're gonna listen to news. We're going to listen to the weather again. We're going to see what Mr. Bill says and see if I need to rethink anything I've told you. We're going to be back. Great music here, Wildfire.